Hello, everybody. Before we get started, I want to apologize for the perpetual frog I have in my throat. I think it's just 40 years of yelling instructions over 6 to 8 quarts over time. And this podcast today is going to be fairly lengthy. So if I start to get scratchy, I apologize ahead of time. I got something here to drink, so hopefully I'll get through it. So this is the second podcast in a multiple podcast series on the purpose of practice. And the first one we did, the first one in this series, we talked about teaching. And one of the things that I mentioned was that the concept of rote repetition or multiple repetition is normally how young athletes learn to perform a skill when they first start playing. And, you know, what volleyball training looks like at an older age is much different than how players could first learn to play the game at the beginning. And I brought some other examples in last time about the guy who was just a phenomenal free throw shooter and really wasn't a great basketball player, but he did one thing really well. And we discussed multiple situations in volleyball where understanding that volleyball is just a single contact, where the first contact is just the ball comes to you, it rebounds off the arms, and you know that's it. You're not performing multiple muscle skills or motor skills to pass the ball. You're moving and passing. And so the ability to learn how to master the first and second contact in volleyball is pretty simple. And it takes some time, but it's not really different than when the young boy or girl is trying to become a baseball or softball player, and the first thing they do is they just throw and catch. And you can throw and catch a lot, and once you start playing catch, you get better at catching, you get better at throwing. And while that's not playing baseball or softball, you know, it introduces you to the foundations of how you're going to play the game. And kind of the same thing, you know, in other areas as well. In basketball, if you just shoot or you just dribble all the time, I mean, you can take a basketball and just dribble. You know, you don't need a basket, you don't need a gym, but if you're dribbling all the time, you're going to get better at dribbling. And so we kind of discussed that in the first podcast about, you know, the rote side, the repetitive side of developing a baseline of skills. And today we're going to talk about introduction to training. And, you know, I'm going to give you a couple thoughts, and I want you to think about this idea of you're going to plan to train and you're going to train to plan. And a lot of it is going to be for coaches. It's going to be your education as a coach and how you approach the practice. And when you go into, and I'll call this the second, because this is the second of the multiple a series that we're going to do. And I talked about the four T's. I talked about teaching, training, tournaments, and travel. And those are things that evolve around our sport of volleyball, high school and club. And so I'm going to touch on those through this podcast series. But today we're going to talk about training. And I think as we move from teaching to training, I think one of the things that you want to think about is you're going to want a well-planned and organized training model, because that's the most important part of developing the elite volleyball player. I mean, you have to be organized in your method of training. And I'm going to get more into practice planning a little bit later, but it's going to be an organized system of training. And then I'm going to give you my definition of training. And I quote, "Developing, training, and mastering all skills, sub-skills, and situations that occur during competition in the order that they occur in a constantly increasing level of difficulty." So basically, you're taking everything that happens in a match or in competition, and you're trying to master the way it happens, the manner it happens, in the order that it happens, and all the different situations that occur during competition. And then as you do that, you're trying to make it more difficult all the time to force your players and individual player to force the body to adapt and perform at a higher level. And that's one of the differences between practice and training. And, you know, training, if players practiced a lot by themselves, there would be a certain level of comfort that they would get to, and they would stay there most of the time because they would not be taken out of their comfort zone. When coaches plan training, you're planning for the training to be difficult, and you're planning for the training to be, you know, always always developing a higher level of, and we're going to talk a lot about struggle today, so always developing a higher level of struggle. And along those lines, I think one of the things to think about is, you know, you're taking the skills from rote repetition to situational repetition as they occur in game situations. A training plan, it should be a systematic roadmap to development. I mean, you have a plan on how you're, you know, and this roadmap or this systematic roadmap, it's in every area. If you're teaching a single skill, what's the evolution or what's the progression that skill is going to go through? So all the players who have to perform that skill go from just introduction to that skill to where they're great at that skill. I mean, you're just not going to throw a ball out there, and people are not going to become great at the five basic volleyball skills, which are underhand, overhand, attack, block, serve. You're going to have a roadmap on how you're going to teach that. And I think that's going to be one of the things that, you know, coaches have to be organized in. And another thing that we're going to talk a lot about is we're going to talk a lot about you understanding the skills, but more importantly, you understanding the sub-skills. And sub-skills are the parts or the components of any skill. And every skill has a basic skill. I just named the five basic skills. But within those five basic skills, you know, you have multiple sub-skills or different areas within those skills that you have to master. And mastering sub-skills is absolutely the key to becoming a great volleyball player. And, you know, and let's just review. Let's talk a little bit about sub-skills. So I think we're all on the same page. So you have an idea of what I'm talking about. And I think the biggest thing is understanding. When I look at a skill like, let's say, oh, I'm going to take overhand passing. I'm going to just touch on all the skills, but let's take overhand passing. And I'm not talking about setting. I'm talking about every player trying to be, you know, in a position where they all have very good overhand skills. Because, you know, I'm taking this skill first for one reason. If you're in a tight match, and for some reason the ball gets dug up in the court by the setter, let's say the libero might not be on the court, or the libero can't get to the ball, do you feel confident that any one of your players can step in and set the ball to an attacker in the left front or right front or back row position in a quality, high quality manner so you can get a kill? And do you feel like everybody on your team can set the ball accurately at the same level? If the answer is no, and I'm going to guess 99% of you right now are saying no, if the answer is no, then one of the things that you need to do as a coach is you need to train overhand passing better. And, you know, not picking on anybody, but that's one of the things to think about. Everybody should have a baseline of skill that they can work at to perform this at a high level. And, you know, when you look at the overhand pass, and again, I'm not talking about setting, but it's the ability to set the ball long distance. It's the ability to set the ball front set. It's the ability to back set. It's the ability to side set if you get to a ball and you can't front set or back set. You know, it's the ability to set the ball along the net. It's the ability to set the ball from the back court. And when you do overhand pass, and I'm not talking about digging with your hands, but I'm talking about, you know, if the ball comes to you, can you set the ball to a hitter? You're generally going to set to either the left front pin, the right front pin, or you're going to set to the back row possibly. But then that skill of overhand passing, it's got all those different sub-skills in it. Underhand is the same way. I mean, underhand passing, you've got midline passing, you've got movement, you've got, you know, inside out, you've got outside in, you've got short to deep, you've got diagonal moving around the court, you know, you've got passing back over your head to left front or right front position, maybe underhand, maybe you have to set the ball underhand. Those are all components of an underhand pass. We get into defense or digging. Okay, you've got cushioning versus power. You've got digging the ball outside your body, which requires angles and shoulder drop and, you know, hip movement. You've got running the ball down, pursuit defense. You've got overhand digging. You've got to get on the floor. If the ball's hit low to the ground, can you roll? Can you dive? Can you sprawl? Can you collapse? Can you side layout? I mean, those are all things that you do as a player, you know, attacking, high balls on the left and right side pin, pass to attack, cover a tip and underneath and hit outside, dig off blocker defense and attack, first tempo, all the different back row zones. Can you attack off one leg? Can you hit line? Can you hit cross court? Can you hit off hand? Can you tip off hands? Those are all, you know, roll shot. Those are all things, those are all sub-skills of attacking. And as a coach, not only do you need to know those sub-skills, but you need to understand how to implement those into your training. Because your players, you know, if you play volleyball for 20 or 30 years, you're going to get a lot better. You see a lot of the people who play in adult leagues. we had adult leagues in our building, we had adult leagues in our building forever. And the same players would come in and play 1 or 2 days a week. They would gradually get better, but they would never master skills at a really high level because they weren't playing volleyball enough. And also they weren't training, they were just playing a lot. And so one of the things you can do as a coach is you can accelerate growth of a player in this area of mastering sub-skills by planning your practice and planning your training to address those sub-skills in match situations. And so I think that's one of the things that's key. And, you know, the last thing I'm going to talk about, we talk about blocking. There's all the blocking footwork. There's the blocking posture. There's the arm position when jumping. You know, that doesn't even take into account your reading and then your ability to trap block, your ability to commit block. Those are all the things that, you know, you have to go through. And so when we look at the skills and we look at, again, over, under, digging, attacking, blocking, and then you've got serving as well. You know, the ability to serve to all these different areas on the court, you know, good tempo, location from various areas. These are all sub-skills or how the skills are broken into finer parts. And, you know, team play has the same thing. When you look at how a team performs, you have side-out offense. You know, you have transition defense. You know, you have transition defense that maybe where there's a focus on the left side attack. You have transition defense on how do we dig and hit quick? How do we dig and hit right side? How do we coordinate our front row with our back row attack? I mean, these are all different components or sub-skills of team dynamics as well. So it's one of the things as a coach, and a lot of coaches don't, I think what a lot of coaches do is they want their kids to play as much volleyball as possible. So the kids will learn these skills in a game situation because they may not be the coaches may not be confident in teaching them, you know, in practice. But it takes so long to master these skills if you're playing a game because they don't come along very often. I mean, think about any match where you have to come underneath the block, cover a tip, swing back outside, maybe try to wipe off a bigger block. You might have one or two or three of those opportunities in a day of play versus you can get into a training situation where in 10 minutes you can get 15, 20, 30 reps, and then you can move on to other things. So that's one of the things that as you plan practices, everything that you do in your training model is going to be based on your ability to master sub skills. And that's going to be one of the keys. And I think that's one of the things that you want to think about as a coach is first you have to understand them. First you have to know what they are. And then you have to kind of go from there. Okay. And I think one of the things that coaches get confused in is, is the ability, the difference for player development and the difference for team development. And one of the things that early on, especially when athletes are young, developing skill as a player automatically has a direct positive impact on the team. Because as young players make less mistakes, you know, and again, go backwards, everything in volleyball is based on how many errors you have. If you have a high number of errors, your team is not going to win. If your team has a low number of errors, they're probably going to win a lot. So as you teach your players to play the game at a high level, as their skills get better, as their errors decrease, your team is going to have more success. It has nothing to do with tactics. It has everything to do with each player performs at a higher level. You know, the cumulative effect on that is that the team is better. I think that's one of the things that you think about. And also, when you think about player and position development, normally the best way to train players in position development is in small groups, situational play. And so it's not going to be in 6-on-6. If you want to train your left sides, you know, you may have a libero, you may have a setter, you may have a left side hitter, you may be going against a blocker. But what you got is you've got smaller groups who get more repetitions in a concentrated manner in the situations as they occur when you play. So I think that's one of the things to think about. So understand as a coach that especially younger players, younger teams where tactics aren't nearly as important, it's not the bigger groups you have when you play, the less each player is going to get the repetitions they need. But the more you focus on sub-skill training with younger players, the faster that team will improve because each player will play at a higher level. They're going to make less mistakes and you're going to be able to go forward from there. So I think that's going to be really important to think about. Another thing to think about is when you want to work on sub skills for players, and also which kind of leads into what we just talked about, and you want the team to work on certain areas that they might be struggling in. And so let's say you're struggling on, you know, with certain areas on of your team, then you set your team up in certain drills, and you know, you ask players in different positions to execute their skills. And again, we go back to like left side attack. Maybe we're talking about libero and left side digging against a double block, and then the outside hitters, the left side hitter has to hit cross court. On the other side of the net, you've got your libero digging, and you start transitioning back and forth, but you start working on areas of play where maybe the team is having difficulty, and as the players get better executing in those areas, the players get better, and then your team problems, you know, start to be resolved, because one of the things that you're doing is you're addressing those issues. And another thing to think about is your training model has to be ever evolving, because it has to focus on always increasing the demands on the player and on the team. And if you continue to increase demands as players start to master situations, then that level of difficulty remains high, but the level of improvement remains high as well. And I think that's one of the things that you really want to look at. And one of the things that coaches need to do is understand how you break down the skills and teach the skills in situations and areas that are the most challenging. And so I think one of the things that you look at is you look at efficiencies of training. And if you've got areas that you want to put into practice or drills that you want to run that are extremely hard, let's say it's physically demanding, or let's say it's mentally demanding, then there's a short time period that you're going to be able to do anything at a high level if there's a high level of mental or physical demand. So one of the things I would suggest is if you're going to do things that are really difficult, or you're going to put in new tactics or new things in your practice plan, do those early on, because as you do those, you know, players can master those because they're rested. But to take something at the end of practice that's going to be extremely challenging, or to put something new in at the end of practice when the players are tired, there's going to be struggle there. And I think that's one of the things you want to try to address, is you want to introduce things that are difficult, or you want to introduce things that are new when players are fresh and they have the ability to understand it and pick it up, and there's no mental or physical fatigue issue there. Another thing that you have to think about as a coach is your frequency of training and your frequency of training individual skills. And, you know, do you practice 2 days a week? Do you practice 3 days a week? Do you practice 4 days a week? Do you practice an hour and a half? Do you practice 2 hours, two and a half, three? One of the things that you have to do is you have to identify how frequent you're going to train all the individual areas that not only make up your team play, but also make up your individual player play. And so that's going to be another thing, is allocating your time and how you manage and how you put that into effect. And that will probably change throughout the year. But one of the things that's going to be key is that if you're coaching younger level players that are trying to master all the skills, and also if you're a club coach versus a high school coach, if you're a club coach, you're charging money to provide a service. So you have a customer on the other side of the spectrum who's paying you money to get better. Generally, customers are individual customers. They're not team customers, because you have an individual parent who's writing you a check, and it may be $5, it may be $500, it may be $5,000, but you have an individual player who's writing you a check. Generally, kids are playing club volleyball so they can improve, so they can make another team next year, so they can continue to get better, whether it's a high school team, whether it's another club team, whether they're trying to get ready to go to college. That's the equation in club volleyball. In high school volleyball, if kids only play high school, then obviously coaches have a much different look at this, because everything is based around the team and the development of the team. But one of the things to think about is your frequency of training, and within the frequency of training, how you're going to allocate your time and to which skills are going to get that the training time. And I think this leads into what I think is a really important topic, and that's the topic of volume versus intensity. And coaches need to understand that these two components are not consistently compatible with each other, because if you're going to do something at a really high level of intensity, you're not going to be able to do it with a lot of volume. And so I think that's one of the things that's key. And just looking at individual sports, attacking and blocking, Those are high intensity skills. I mean, if you're trying to be a great attacker, you know, and you've got to get kills against a defense, one of the things that you have to do is you have to go at 100% intensity almost every time. Same thing with blocking. If you're trying to block attackers at a high level, you know, you're not going through blocking footwork repetitions. You're not going through muscle memory work. You're going through a maximum effort to, you know, make your move, jump, get your hands over the net as far as possible. That's 100% effort. The skill of blocking and the skill of attacking are high intensity skills. And so one of the things that you're going to have to understand as a coach is you're going to be limited in volume on how hard you can go at 100%. So, you know, and the, on the flip side, serving, serve receive, overhand passing, those are low intensity skills. You know, they're more technical, and you can go, you can do a lot more repetitions in those areas. So as you plan practice, what areas will be based, be dedicated to volume, and what areas will be dedicated to intensity? Generally, if you're playing any drill that's got a score, you know, or you're doing anything where there's a certain number of kills needed, or, you know, you're in a 6-on-6 scoring competitive situation, it's going to be a high intensity environment. Okay. It's probably not going to be high volume. Now, you may run the drill for a long period of time, but there's going to be a lot of dead time in between. So volume versus intensity is one of the things that you want to address. Also, looking at volume versus intensity, you know, at, you know, if you've had a tough weekend, you've played a long tournament on Saturday and Sunday, or let's say you're at a qualifier or a long, a big tournament, you've played Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and let's say you come back in the gym to practice on Wednesday, Thursday, you know, that may be a day that you're high volume on your soft training, maybe a lot of first contact work. Players are trying to get their legs back and also trying to get their minds back into play. You probably won't come in the day after a high intensity tournament and go right back at it again, because you're going to want to be in recovery mode. So as a coach, not only do you understand the skills, not only do you understand, you've identified the sub-skills, but also you look at the component of each practice in terms of volume versus intensity. You've decided that when I'm going to introduce something new, or we're going to do something at a high level, we're going to do that early on, because the players are going to be fresh mentally, they're going to be fresh physically. All of those things go into making up your practice and planning your practice. And I remember, I think I read, it was maybe Pat Riley who said he would spend 5 hours planning a 2-hour practice, because he wanted to make sure that every minute of practice was quality. And that's one of the things that you want to do as a coach, is you want to plan for every second of your practice to be as high quality as possible, because you want it to be efficient. And so try to get rid of all the dead time, try to get rid of all the downtime. And I've talked in past podcasts about, you know, have your players have water bottles right by the court, drink water as they need it, don't stop for water breaks, because, you know, if everybody has a chance to come off and then get a drink, then you keep flowing. You don't have to stop, start talking. The worst thing to do is stop, everybody breaks, you got to get everybody back together again, and then by the end of a 2 or 3 hour practices, you've lost 15, 20, 25 minutes of time total. So I think that's one of the things. Another thing is understanding practice intensity versus match intensity. And, you know, I think elite coaches all over the world understand that, you know, when you play a volleyball match, and you see this in college and to some extent in high school, in the pros and the international as well, match play is, while it's very intense in the middle of a rally, or the emotions are high, or the crowd is loud, and there's a lot of white noise on the outside, there's a lot of external pressure, match play is not nearly, shouldn't be nearly as difficult as practice. Practice should be much more difficult than match play, because in match play, you've got timeouts. You know, at the college level, you've got challenges, you know, you've got video challenges, you know, you've got time between sets and matches, or sets, matches at tournaments. Those are all things that play into, you know, the volume and the intensity of a match. But practice should be geared to where you're pushing your athletes in practice at a much, much higher level, because you're trying to train a system, and you're trying to train the individuals. First of all, you're trying to make your changes in practice. You want players to make changes in practice to the things that they do. If they're trying to make changes during match play, then the mistakes that they've made in the past, they're probably going to continue to make. You're going to see change and growth in practice. And one of the things that I always felt was that I never saw a player execute a skill in a match for the first time. Generally, when you see it, you've seen it in practice a lot, and the evolution is that they start to get it in practice, and once they start to get comfortable with it in practice, you start to see it in a regular rotation in match play. Because what happens is, you know, players have to, they grow and they develop. And if your practices are difficult and hard, you know, then players are continuing to make improvement. And as you see that new level of play in practice, then maybe the next tournament you're going to see that new level of play. And then when we get into competition, you know, in one of the other podcasts, I'm going to talk a lot about, you know, the idea of practices, how the practices are used for competition and growth, and how you gauge that from one practice block into a tournament block. So we'll talk about that in another podcast. But I think that's one of the key things. And then, so understanding that your practices should be much, much, much more difficult in terms of just constant struggle, much more difficult than any competition, because competition, while it's emotional, while there's a lot of other things going on, one of the things that you have to understand about practice is where you win your championships. Practice is where you develop your intensity. Practice is where you set your standard. Competition is just where you show the things that you've done in practice. It's not going to be any different. So I think that's one of the things to think about. So, and then finally, let's talk about daily schedule and let's talk about weekly schedule, because I think one of the things that coaches were trying to understand is what do we do? How do I plan my practices? And I think if teams are younger, one of the things that I would suggest is that you hit on general skills. You try to get a little bit of almost everything done every practice. You know, young kids, and I'm talking about maybe junior high kids in volleyball, you know, while you want your teams to win and while your parents want your teams to win, you're really trying to develop kids to be better for the future. And so one of the things that you want is you want regular doses of repetition, regular doses of competition. You want regular doses of all that when players are young, because they're going to continue to grow and develop. So, you know, I'm a big believer in the foundation and skill development of younger players, where you're going through a pretty organized and a pretty systematic routine on a regular basis, so young kids can develop a baseline of skills. And I think that's important for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons it's important is because players have a tendency, some players, to change positions as they get older. Maybe they're not tall enough to play middle. They're going to have to move outside. And because you've had a really, really strong emphasis in ball control and defense and serve receive with all your players, that transition is smooth. Or maybe you're going to go from an outside hitter to a libero. And because you've done a lot of first contact work and because everybody on your team can set, it's easy to transition from that position to another position. So the bigger foundation and the larger base that you give to young players, it's going to be easier for them to specialize when they get older. And you've heard me talk in past podcasts about, you know, specialization is the enemy of greatness, because when you do just a few things at a young age, you go past a point where you can really learn to do them later. You're not going to learn how to do, you know, it's going to be rare that an 18 or 19-year-old is going to learn how to be an elite-level serve receiver. And so unless they're just going to go into, you know, service camp where they're passing thousands and thousands of balls a week. But the key thing for coaches who develop young players is give them a foundation of all skills. Now, again, specialization at an early age will allow teams to be successful. But it's going to be the death knell for a lot of players, because if you get to a point where, you know, you can't perform skills later, and, you know, that position demands that skills be performed, then you're going to be in trouble. So I think that's key. Now, as teams get older, one of the things to think about is, you know, you're probably going to have an emphasis. And one of the things that I always did, because I coached at Sports Performance for years, I coached the 18 elite team, and I ran and master coached all the, you know, the 18, 17, 16 age groups. And one of the things that we tried to do is we tried to get to a point later where we had each day had its own emphasis. And so we would come out of a tournament on Saturday and Sunday. The older kids would have a hard lift on Monday, because we felt that was one of the best ways to recover. No jumping, no compression. It was heavy lifting, but we didn't do any workload as far as jump goes or compression. And then we came back we took Tuesday off. We came back on Wednesday. Wednesday was our first contact day. We were heavy on first contact. And for a couple of reasons, we felt like we were still in recovery mode. And we wanted Wednesday to be a light or non-compression day. And because we did that, we know that over the course of a season, and as players go through our program or any program and go on and play at the collegiate level, ball control skills are so important. And at the club level, you're off playing on Saturdays and Sundays. You're getting ready to play sometimes as the weekend comes. So a lot of times, coaches have to neglect ball control. And I'm talking about a lot of high repetition, serve, receive, defense, things like that. So we just blocked Wednesday off to where we were going to be a heavy first contact day. And so when our teams would be doing serve receive at the end, maybe rotation passing, our setters would be off doing setting reps, our middles would be off doing footwork reps. But we made Wednesday a heavy competition day. And then Thursday became attack, block, rally component. You know, we would do a lot of, we would do our blocking sequences. We would do attacking against the block. We would spend a lot of time on what I would call component, cooperative component work, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5, where players are hitting all different areas of the court, all the different shots they need to work on in a controlled manner so we could go higher volume. We didn't have to think about the intensity level being high. We weren't trying to terminate drills. We were trying to co-op in drills. So we were getting lots of good rally reps. And then on Friday, we would compete. And we competed on Friday because, especially if we played on Saturday, Sunday, we wanted to compete Friday night at a high level and walk back in the gym Saturday morning with everybody just fresh off of a high level of competition. And another thing, reason we did it is because we knew that to win a national championship, we were going to have to be good for 4 days. And so Thursday, Friday for us was higher level of intensity, executing, you know, component situational skills, because it led into Saturday, Sunday. So if we could put a good Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday together, and then we came back and lifted hard on Monday. So we had a 5-day cycle forever. We had a 5-day cycle of high intensity. So when we would get to national tournaments, you know, we felt like we would actually get stronger as the tournament went on, because our practice week had been much more difficult than any tournament we went to, because we would go 3 hours hard straight in a row, which is a lot more intensity, a lot more volume. So we just felt like the model that we used, you know, Monday through Sunday was far superior to what we had to go through on that 4-day block for national tournaments. So we ended up having a lot of success in those areas. So I think that's one of the things that you can look at. And another thing to think about is as your players train and, you know, at all levels, just by focusing on skill development, and I mentioned it earlier, you're going to have, you know, you're going to have a team that has a lot more success, because again, I said earlier, it all comes down to errors. The fewer errors you make, the better chance you have to win. You know, it's not tactical genius from coaches. It's just we make less mistakes, we make less serving errors, we make less passing errors. We have the ability to play at a high level. You know, we're going to win more matches. It's just that simple. So no matter how creative you want to be, and no matter how many plays you want to run, and no matter how you want your blocking tactics to be, and how you want your defensive tactics to be, and all the things that you might want to do as a coach, and all the clinics you go to, and all the YouTube videos you watch, if players play at a higher level by making less mistakes, then your team is going to be more successful. And some of those are literally geared to absolutely that you have to play against great competition to be good, to be great. There's no question about that. But you have to have a foundation of skills before you can ever step on the court and expect to play at great competition. So if I take a bunch of young kids and take them on the court with an 18 open team that has a high level of skill, it doesn't matter how long that young team plays against that 18 open team, they're never going to win because the skill set doesn't match. And so I think that's one of the things that you want to think about as a coach is as you're planning and you're putting your practice together, you know, how much of my practice is dedicated to individual development, maybe station work or individual skill work? You know, how much of it's going to be dedicated to transition and side out work, or, you know, situational work, team situational work? Those are all things that you think about as you plan your practices. So, and again, I'm trying to talk about just the breakdown of practice, and, you know, a lot of that's going to be based on the needs of your team, but I think that's one of the things to think about. So the one area that I think is the most lacking in the junior high school volleyball level, and I think college coaches would probably tell you this, is how you're going to get your players and teams to continually prove on an ongoing basis. The only way you're going to do that, and I think a lot of coaches think that the more we play, the better we're going to get, which there is some validity to that. But I think the one thing that you're going to have to come to the realization is how challenging is your culture? How challenging is your practice environment? And I'm not talking about you as a coach yelling and screaming. I'm not talking about kids dropping down and doing 20 push-ups. I'm not talking about kids getting on the line and have to run a bunch of sprints because they let a ball hit the ground. I'm talking about how difficult is the environment that you're controlling and that your kids are training in. How challenging is it? You know, when you say if it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you, it's 100% true. I mean, everything gets stronger from stress. I mean, we see all these iron sharpens iron, but everything grows from stress because you have to be stronger to survive the stress. It's, you know, it's whether it's lifting in the weight room, whether it's running and your cardiovascular is getting better, all those things come down to you continually stress yourself more to become stronger in those situations. So I think the thing that you're going to want to think about is, are your players in a constant state of struggle? And by a constant state of struggle, I just simply mean, is it hard for them to execute the drills? And I don't mean always physically hard, but is it difficult to execute the drills that you're demanding that they execute, or situations or level of play, because you're continually asking them to be better as they master a situation? So I think that's going to be one of the things that's going to be really important. And it may be where late in the season, where you've put a lot of time in, you may have a high level of demand, but it may be really short because the volume may be low because, you know, you've had a long season. Early on, it may be where there's a lot of technical demands, where you've got to, and I always looked at things just simply as there are kind of three ways to run a drill. You can run a drill for time, which doesn't mean that there's any success happening. And you can run a drill based on a certain amount of success. You know, like if we're passing, we need 100 good passes. But it might take 500 passes to get 100. And then the third way is we need consecutive success, or we need a high rate of success. We need a high percentage of success. You know, then you've got, you know, what a lot of people would call deliberate practice. You've got specifically a demand that you're trying to execute. And maybe if you don't meet that demand, you start over till you execute it. And, you know, those are, and I think at a high level, coaches understand that, but a lot of young coaches, or a lot of coaches that you know, aren't at that level, it's one of the things that they don't understand, because one of the things that it's easy to get comfortable in your gym. Players are happy. The team has had some success. You know, there's a loose environment. You know, those are all things that can be positive at times. But one of the things that you have to understand is, if you're going to be great at something, there's going to be a continual struggle to try to get better in all areas. Once you master a skill, or once you get fairly good at a skill, that skill or the components or the sub-skills within a certain areas will have to become more difficult. And that's one of the things I think that coaches struggle with. And, you know, because a hard practice environment isn't easy for anyone, but sometimes it's very hard for some people, much harder than it is for others. But one of the things that you have to look at is, you have to look at, how demanding are my practices? I mean, what kind of standards do I have? I mean, and it could be as simple as a serve receive drill. I mean, you know, we'll do some stuff where, you know, in serve receive, you have perfect pass, you have good pass, you have bad pass, you have error. So to me, a perfect pass is, you know, what we would call a 3-point pass, or a pass that you can run a quick attack off of. So if you can hit first tempo, that would be what we call a perfect pass. A good pass would be, you know, the ball's passed inside 3 meters. It's inside from the sideline. I can set front row, like back row. I can set left front, right front pretty easy. I might not easily set the first tempo, but at least it's a good pass. And then a bad pass would be a ball that's passed behind the 3 meter line. I only really have a high ball option for it. And then you have errors, and you know, errors are, you know, you get aced, you overpass. So good pass, bad pass could be, you know, we call a 1 or a 0. Good pass is a 2 or a 3, and then you get the perfect pass. But you may set your serve receive drill up where, you know, and we do this a lot. We'll go 10 serve receive, 7 good pass, 0 errors. You get aced, that's it. So you have to go 10, no, just something simple as that. But that's a struggle. And if you do that, if you get 10, 7, 0, you get a point. And let's say, okay, you need 5 points to get out of this drill. And so, you know, it may take, your libero may get in there and get out in 5 or 6 attempts, which means that it's too easy for your libero. So your Libra might need, let's say, 6 perfect and not 7 good, still no errors. You might have to change the standard for your Libra. So one of the things that you think about is who, you know, and I call this the struggle bus. I mean, who gets on the struggle bus first and what are the standards on the struggle bus? And one of the things that you want to think about as a coach is, if I'm going to continually make my environment difficult, you know, how, what are the standards of my environment? So if every drill is the same, that means you're, you know, you're all American, you're superstar, you know, you're go-to player. You know, she may execute the drill at a higher level because she's good. She's just better than everybody else. So maybe does that player need different standards? And so I just mentioned a passing drill. Let's say maybe you have a hitting drill. And let's say you're going to have your left sides are going to hit against full team attack. So it's 6 versus 1, basically. So your left side hitter has got to take swings against the full team, got to get a first ball kill. And let's say, you know, you tell your outside hitter, your best outside hitter, you need 6 first ball kills. Now, it may take 20 or 30 swings to get 6, but that's a standard that you've set for her. But maybe nobody else in your team can get 6, or they would have to hit so many balls that it wouldn't be remotely, you know, fair, or it wouldn't resemble what happens in gameplay. So maybe they have 4, or maybe they have 3, because your 13th or 14th player, who's maybe a younger outside hitter and not nearly as skilled, are you going to ask that player to execute at the same level as the player who has to win matches for you on a regular basis? So when you start talking about competitive struggle, and you start talking about, you know, who you're going to put on that struggle bus, think about the standards of struggle. They're not always going to be the same. And, you know, it's a team is not a democracy. When you get on the court and you start playing, you know, you're going to have somebody that's going to hit more balls than anybody else. So in that sense, that person is going to be responsible for the success of your team way more often, is from an attacking point of view, than somebody else. Maybe that fourth outside hitter doesn't get on the court very often. So in the practice environment, does that fourth outside hitter, does that hitter need to have the same standard? Because, you know, for that hitter to get 3 or 4 kills, it could be the same amount of struggle as your number one going out there and getting 6 kills. So that's one of the things to think about. Think about, you know, as you vary your levels of expectations, you're going to work to challenge each player to the best of their ability, but regardless of what you do, you always, and I repeat, you always ask your best to give more, because that's why they're your best, okay? And I've talked in the past about when your gym environment and your training environment is always geared to challenging your very best players. So when you sit down and plan a practice, you're going to have a lot of teaching involved. You're going to have, you know, players that maybe can't execute the drill, but never plan a practice from the bottom up. Always plan a practice from the top down, because you want your very best players. You never want them to come to a practice and walk away and going, I didn't learn, I wasn't challenged. You know, there might have been a lot of other people challenged. There might have been a lot of other people learning. But unless you're going to get, and you might as well give that player the day off. So on the other hand, you know, if you want to break up teaching, if you got kids who are struggling, you know, that's for classroom, or that's for special sessions, or that's before or after practice. But you never punish your best because they are your best. What you do is you challenge your best because you want your team to continue to be better, which means they have to continue to be better as well. So I think that's a key thing as well. So in closing, I want to kind of review a few things. And I think that, you know, I hope that you'll think about the following as a coach or as a director if you're teaching coaches. But the first thing, and I said this at the beginning, is it's very important that you understand all the sub-skills within a training block. And how are you going to teach those skills? And again, I talked about attacking. I talked about, you know, serve receive, you know, if you're going to pass midline, if you're going to pass outside midline, if you're going to shuffle left or shuffle right, if you're going to pass short deep, if you're going to pass with your hands, do I pass better on the right than I pass on the left? Am I a 2-2 passer on the right? Am I a 1-8 passer on the left? You know, then obviously as a coach, I've got to train that passer better and more on the left, or I've got to make some changes. And so that's one thing I think it's important. And also, do you understand how you're going to implement this sub-skill training in your daily schedules? I think that's going to be important as well. How do you organize your training priorities? Because you have team goals. You know where the team is struggling. I think that's going to be important as well. How do you organize your training around your team success, but also understanding Do I want my team to work in these areas, or are we losing, or are we struggling because certain players are struggling in certain areas, and I would be better off, our time would be better used if I got these players to be better in these situations as opposed to just focusing on maybe a team concept. That's one of the things you're going to have to realize as well. Another thing is, are your training expectations in practice what you expect to see when you play a match? I mean, are you training at a level to win your conference or your regional or your state or your national championship? Is your training level there, and what you're seeing in practice, does the model that you see in practice and does the level of execution that you see in practice, does it meet those standards and those guidelines? And another thing is, think about weaknesses. You continue to struggle in certain areas. And one of the things as a coach is, you have to decide how you're going to address that struggle or that those weaknesses or that failure. And one of the things to think about is, can you fix it by training? You know, can you fix it by making a substitution or a personnel change? Can you fix it by making a tactical change? You have to be open-minded to all those things. I mean, it could be where, you know, you have to maybe you switch positions with a player. Maybe a player that you love in certain areas is not doing a job in another area. You know, those are all the areas you have to look at, because I'm a strong believer that, you know, especially young players, they're continually evolving. So, you know, somebody who's struggling in the club season in December may be much better in March or April. But if that same player, after all the things that you've done, is still struggling in the same areas, you know, then maybe you as a coach need to make a tactical change or a personnel change. That's another thing you have to look at. And then I think the last thing is, and I go back to it, your best and your most talented. You know, what are you asking from them? Are you asking them to carry a proportionally bigger load in training, you know, based on their skill set compared to the other players on the team? Because, you know, when you play, they have to carry that load. And so if the expectations are there on Monday through Friday, then there's a good chance that they're going to be successful on Saturday and Sunday. And if you're not asking your best and most talented players to perform at a higher level, then why not? Because don't they always carry a bigger load when they play in the matches? And if not, why don't they do that in practice? So I think that's another thing that you want to look at. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and I want to thank you guys for taking the time to listen. Again, I apologize for the scratchy voice, but we made it through, and we're about 48 minutes, so just under 48 minutes. So I hope you enjoy this, and then next time I'm going to talk about competition, because I've got some thoughts and I've got some ideas that are going to go against the flow of maybe some of the things that you're seeing generally across the board. But I think, to me, player development, ultimately team development, is important. So in our next podcast on the purpose of practice, we're going to talk about we get into competition. So I will talk to everybody later, and wishing everybody the very best. Thank you.